I had an epiphany during the coverage of the 1968 demonstrations at Columbia, that here suddenly was a news event of interest in the entire country. This was a big story. There were protesters, there were people sitting in, there were counter-protesters, and I was on the radio. And I discovered at that moment that being on the radio, anchoring and also coordinating coverage of this, put me in a position that was of use to people at a time of great confusion. It satisfied my desire to know a great deal about what was going on. And it also satisfied my desire to really not be active at all in the event. That is, I would have no desire to either protest or counter-protest. It just is not the way I'm made, but I wanted to know what was going on. And I found this position of the broadcaster, the journalist on the air, to be something that was satisfying in that sense. I was an observer. I was performing a useful service to people. And people said I was doing a good job at it. And I said, boy, if I could actually do this for a living, that would be fantastic. And remarkably, I've been able to do that.
You've been remarkably lucky. I mean, you have not moved around an awful lot. You had it was WRVR in New York City. Was that right after school?
Right after school was a commercial top 40 station on Long Island, where I was a morning newscaster, and did a show that was a combination of telephone talk with a 6-second delay that I engineered myself, and then played records in between the phone calls. That was my. I did that for several months. Then WRVR in New York City. And when it was sold, I moved to Washington to go to NPR, assuming that it was one of a couple of times in my youth when I assumed that I would go to work for this place, which I hadn't really heard that much about until I came to work for it. And then within a year or two, I could get a job at a real network and get into television, which seemed to be, unlike radio, a thriving, growing medium. And as it turned out, by the time that move was feasible, I didn't want to do it.
What about NPR within a few years made you realize mm-hmm. this is where you were going to stay, or maybe had some sort of inkling that you would do a better job describing things for the ear rather than showing?
One thing is that I really discovered at NPR how good a medium this is, radio, that people take on board what they hear on the radio in a way that's close to reading. When Cokie Roberts, whom I hired at NPR, actually, a zillion years ago, was dividing her time between radio and television, she would say, when I go someplace, the people know who I am from television. They know what I say from radio. This is a medium that is, when people are tuned in, they're tuned in. It's not just something that they're looking at. NPR was growing also. It was a fun place to be. We didn't go there. People of my generation, because it had a lot of prestige and because we'd been listening to it throughout our high school and college years, we were going to the place we hadn't listened to, that hadn't happened yet. And so we had the chance to build it ourselves, to be part of building it. That and not having the look of a matinee idol on television, I guess, made radio a natural for me.
Did it help being part of a generation, too, that had, you got to NPR, mm-hmm. a 90-minute afternoon show to Phil, seen as an absolute huge challenge at that time, and now we have several hours of programming.
So. Yeah, and we didn't have that many segments either, so it was a great place to experiment and to if you had an interesting idea of how we really ought to be doing the news, it was a place where you had a reasonable chance of getting a shot at doing it that way. And I've often felt, that NPR was and probably still is the least cynical broadcast news organization I can think of. That is, it's a place that every day puts on a program. Today we're putting on a program, which I'm not a part of. I'm here in Illinois. But if I were just working in Illinois, I would be listening to that program. That's the show I would listen to on my drive home. I'm producing a program that that I would find interesting and would satisfy my curiosity. And I think a lot of other broadcasts are designed for somebody else. They're ways of finding an audience that's, there are enough of them in the prime demographic, we're ratcheting it to their attention span. And I I think NPR remains a place where you can put on a program that you yourself would listen to, and I can't think of a better guarantee of its quality than that.
How about the rise of satellite and internet radio? How has that impacted what you do, or has it?
It's a good question. Satellite, I don't think, has impacted that much. I'm not that impressed with satellite as a medium. I mean, I don't know why in this day and age we should have a medium that goes away when you drive under an overpass on the highway. I think the only thing superior to me about satellite over FM radio is that there's more variety on the satellite than there is on FM radio, and the challenge to FM broadcasters, and to AM broadcasters for that matter, is to get more interesting things on the radio. Internet is something different. Internet is a way into... It's a way into the back doors of all the news organizations, first of all. I think most people who hear things or see things from NPR on the web find them not from our many messages saying you can hear more about this at npr.org. Most of them find us through Google, and in searching something, up comes an NPR mention. So the Internet is clearly a way that people are learning a lot about what's out there. Perhaps being introduced to the radio service. The big challenge is it true that people in their 20s today are as uninterested in radio as, let's say, my kids who are around 30 were uninterested in AM radio when they were growing up? Is radio generally an old-fashioned medium for young people, and are they all listening on the Internet instead? Which will obviously have to change the way we find them. Is radio something that if we make it interesting enough for people and have enough variety out there that they'll come to, they'll find at some point in their late 20s when they're driving their kids to and from school?
If you could go out in the field somewhere tomorrow, I mean, would it be just out at the Capitol, or would you want to plant yourself somewhere overseas?
I'm dying to get in the spring. I think we're all going to go to China, on all things considered. I've never been. I've got my Mandarin self-teacher with CD ROMs. I'm going to start reading, and I'm very interested in seeing China and doing some reporting there. I think that so much of the world over this century is going to be determined by what people there do, that I just find it's a huge a gap in my experience, and I'm dying to see it and experience it.
You were the lone, I believe, you said foreign reporter.
I was the
entire
foreign staff, yes.
And remind me where you were?
I was in London. I was sent over. I was an editor, technically, but I also did reporting and liaison with BBC. I worked at a Bush House, the headquarters of BBC External Services. I was the American at Bush House for 4 years.
Did you want to look around once in a while and feel like you were on an island? Is the only...
No. I felt that I was... here I was in this building with several hundred people from all the different language services of BBC. Who are terrifically smart and experienced people, all of whom are making radio. I'd never been in such a place until then. And not a single one of them was either my boss or under my supervision. So it was marvelous.
One of the questions I had was to ask you what you listen to, but as you'd stated, you would listen to the program today, even though you haven't had a role.
I would. I would listen to that. I would listen to classical music, and I would listen to sports radio.
Having said that, do public and commercial radio have any influence on one another, or are they going in their own separate paths?
Yeah, they're right. You know, as one of our consultants always said, people don't go to the store to buy a public radio. You know, we're all on the radio band together. And I think right now that we could really use some consult with the commercial broadcasters to do something to liven up the radio band. I mean, I think that we're all in this together, and people tend to... people like explanations that are technological. You know, we're losing listenership because the young people are all listening to their MP3 players, their iPods all day long. They don't like the explanation is we're losing them because they all find it very boring, that what we're doing all the time. And I think that it actually behooves everyone who's on the radio band to have more than just some narrow micro slices of the same kind of popular music pie being served up on a number of stations in the same market. People are not finding enough of interest there, and I think we will suffer in part if the only thing that our listeners find on the radio band of interest is us. We used to, for years, just assume people would turn on their radio a few times a day, and when there, if we were the most interesting thing they could listen to, we would benefit from that. But if we have to drag them to the radio someday, that's not good. Also, I think we should listen to how people do things in other areas of radio, how they present the news. I can't say that I hear a lot of inspiration in all news radio as to what's going on. I think there's generally been an abdication of real reporting. But it is interesting to hear how the whatever their shortcomings and their whatever is objectionable about them, what is the rapport between the Don Imuses and Sean Hannitys? What do they have with their audience? What does Rush Limbaugh have going? And what if that is something that we have no interest in whatever? And what if it is actually interesting? What about the way of speaking or the way of addressing people? What can we learn from other people who are successful at this thing? I think that's important.
Finally, what does 40 years of public broadcasting mean to you? I mean, do you go to the editorial staff meetings every day and are reminded of why you do this and are taken aback at the fact that this has gone on for?
Well, I'm reminded that there are some things we should not do. That is, we can't simply say, how do we get the largest number of 18 to 35-year-old males to listen to our show today? That just isn't the mission of public broadcasting. That may be the mission of most of the radio stations on the dial. It's not ours. There's something about the public interest. There's something, it's a stodgy old word, but there's something educational or derived from an educational mission that still imbues us. And that's public broadcasting. And frankly, without the Public Broadcasting Act, I wouldn't believe for a second that any of that would be evidenced anywhere on the radio dial today.